Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, buddy.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years and number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, Randy. How are you?
Aloha, amigos.
Aloha,
everywhere.
Amigos. Oh, yes.
That's
aloha,
the Hawaii, California
bonjour,
deal there.
Que pasa. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We're all over.
Yeah. Worldwide.
And it looks like all the areas are getting, some areas are still getting snow and cold weather, but we can see spring starting to try to bud out there. I heard somebody was telling me the other day on the East Coast, they actually saw ants, and they thought, man, how are we seeing ants? It's been so cold. But
really? We're
getting there. And over in Hawaii, we've had a lot of rain on Oahu, but it's clearing up, too. And so, yeah. Yeah, I think even the critters and the bugs and the ants, everything's confused, you know. We get cold, hot, warm. The weather patterns have changed so much. So, but all's good.
Here. Are you guys, I know there was talk of a tsunami warning because of the Chile earthquake. Are you guys okay?
Yeah. I think it was about 2:00 yesterday, Hawaii time. I got a text. Other people got texts about potential flooding, tsunami warning. I guess that we were checking. It was like 8.2 in Chile. It's a huge earthquake. But yeah we ended up not having any issues. But you're always on alert. You don't know, you know, when that happens. And God bless everybody. What's going on there? God bless the people that are going through this tragedy right now, because it's not good.
Yeah.
But
we made it.
Huh?
I know you. You've lived there a long time, off and on, and I know we were there for a while. And I've gone through a couple of tsunami warning deals, and that's no fun because you gotta, you know, depending on where you are, you gotta evacuate and go to higher ground and. It's scary because you kind of think about it, those visions of, you know, of the Philippines and wherever else you've seen those tragedies on TV, those visions start to kind of play in your brain and you've got, you know, we better get to higher ground. This might be for real, you know.
That's it. I was thinking yesterday, oh, should I go to higher ground before the traffic starts? Because once the traffic starts, it's going to be bumper to bumper. And then when they tell everybody to go, it's going to be bumper to bumper, right? You know, because it gets – but, it's really – it's just thank God for the great warning systems that we have now in place, you know, that they didn't have years and years ago. What about the huge earthquakes and tsunamis, remember, in 2004 with the Indian Ocean? That was so bad. And just a lot of people weren't warned in time, right, where there was, like, hundreds of thousands of people that died. So it's the warning systems is we're really thankful for all those in place, that you know, because that's really the key, right, is the warning.
I know we were up, you know, our last trip over to Maui recently, we were staying with friends in Kula, which is pretty high ground, if you know what I mean. It's way up the side of Haleakala, you know, and yet there are tsunami sirens up there as well. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but I'm sure that's just to let people in the area know what's going on. Obviously, that's pretty safe up in Kula in upcountry, but take a quick
You know, I guess it all depends, right, how big it is, and you're right.
Yeah.
And
you never know.
And you can't assume everybody has a cell phone or the TV or, you know, so... Yeah, I think we're really blessed. I mean, I feel so badly for people that when they don't have the warnings. And the earthquakes are a different story. We don't really have, the earthquakes come, right? And we don't know that they're coming as much as you would with, of course, a tsunami. Well, I mean, there's testing, but, I mean, we don't always know. But so today our show, not to sound like we're being the bearers of bad news, right? But we're not. We're just kind of buyer beware. People beware, education is key. Today our show is on environmental hazards and what you should know before buying a house or property, right? So it's like, oh, gosh, don't scare everybody. But interestingly enough, you know, when you look at it, no matter where you live, you're going to have environmental issues. You're going to have things that, you know, we live on this earth, and just like you have sediment cracks, and people will say, wow, I see this line here, and I see this line here. This must not be a safe property. And it's like, well, you're going to have sediment cracks because we're on Earth, and the Earth rotates, right? And you've got weather patterns and water and things and hills. And, I mean, it's impossible to build anywhere and not have anything happen anywhere, right? So it's important to not be afraid to move forward in buying something because you're going to rent or live somewhere, right? It's just important to be informed. And a lot of home inspectors, I mean, I've been in the industry so many years that when I first got in, we didn't really have home inspections. People would have to say, well, I want to get this or that, but it just wasn't as commonplace as now it is for people to get home inspections. A lot of home inspectors are going to check out your heating, your electrical, your plumbing. They're not necessarily going to check out environmental issues. Mm. So you want to make sure in your contract that you're adding, which many contracts are board contracts, depends on who does your contract for you, where you are, if you're working with an agent or broker or not. Many of the contracts, if you are working, are going to be are going to cover a lot of issues that were put together by board attorneys for the board and the agents and brokers to use, but some may not, and it doesn't mean that some may come in the form of addendums and that somebody may not present that to you. So you as the buyer really owe it to yourself to do your due diligence. So some of the environmental issues that could come up, for example, I'm just going to go down the list, and just we never have enough time on this show to go through everything, but if you'd like to call in, have a question, please do so. We would love to hear from you. And or if you want to email, you can email radio@realityuniversal.com. You can always get in touch with us. A lot of people listen archive, so sure, email us and contact us. And a lot of this information is right there. You can Google information. It's just you want to be informed. Call-in number is 347-945-5428, 347-945-5428. Some of the issues that would fall under environmental issues are, you know, asbestos, magnetic fields that come from power lines, radon, lead, mold. Your well and your septic can have environmental issues. Underground storage tanks could have been in the property or on the property at some time. Formaldehyde. These are some of the items that would fall under environmental issues. So we're going to go down the list, and we're going to go over a little bit of each. And you can also get information on www.epa.gov. And the EPA is oversees a lot of the environmental issues here in the U.S. So it's very important to do it. But what I want to mention is you don't want to be afraid, because every property is going to have something, somehow, some way that you may have to decide, do we buy this, do we not buy it, or you want to ask the seller to fix it. Can this be fixed? Is it something we can live with? You'd be amazed at what we all live with every day. Just look at think about the air that we breathe in, right? No matter where you are in the world, I mean, there's things, acid rain, there's pollution. Right? In Hawaii, we get the fog. L.A., you guys say you get the smog, right? We have, no matter where you are, there's stuff you're breathing in that you can't control. So, you know, there's a certain amount of things that you have to say, okay, I'm going to just, what do I do? Where is there anywhere that you can live that's going to be so, so clean and perfect? So that's something you have to decide on your own. Mm-hmm. Just like I was surprised in Maryland, you know, there's certain parts of the state that had lots and lots of government testing, lots and lots, and that happens around the country, that there's some areas where there's higher rates of cancer than other areas because of This is what I've heard from surveys and testing and reports. But, you know, so you want to be careful yourself, like if there was some huge plant, power plant, and something spilled or there was a problem. So you want to do due diligence when you're checking in the areas of where you're buying to see what could have happened or what may have happened. But it's not, you know, so that's something, the homework that you should do ahead of time. And but when it comes down to, and then if you're buying commercially, of course, when people, we're talking mostly about residential here, but commercially when people go in and they're buying, say gas, there was a gas station before where there's going to be underground storage tanks that could have leaked into the ground. Sometimes there's been oil spills or other spills, and that can leak into the ground. So you just want to be aware, but not afraid. Mm. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Not to, don't be, because there's going to be stuff everywhere. It's kind of, and some people are more sensitive to certain things than others. So it's just a matter of checking all of this out and not assuming, because it really doesn't fall on the agent or the broker or the owner to let you know about everything, because, you know, or they, whatever they know, they should let you know. But, I mean, there could be stuff that's just natural, stuff that's coming in, flowing in later that, who knows, right, wasn't there. So, so on your contracts, just check into everything and just say, I'd like to add this or I'd like to add that. Or what do you think about this or do we have this? Like, for example, in radon, I mean, radon is very prevalent in the mainland, especially on the east coast of the continental U.S., but not in Hawaii. So you may not necessarily need a radon test in Hawaii. It may not make sense. So these are things you just want to check into. So let's see. We're going to first start off with asbestos. Okay. Asbestos is dangerous if breathed in high levels. And you'll find, you can find asbestos in the old boiler wraps, water heater wraps may have had it. Remember when people were doing the popcorn ceilings for years? Do you remember that, where they would, they'd do popcorn and they'd shoot up even little pieces of glass in it and they thought that looked pretty, or you'd see it in a lot of hotels? That may have asbestos in it. You know, and if it's in there and you want to, you want to see, and if it's at higher levels, or you ask the seller to remove it, or you work it out with the price and you get it removed, I mean, there's just many ways to check into this. The asbestos could be in the siding. It's just, it's usually going to be in the older homes. And you can read up on any of this on the EPA.gov or Google and just start, you know, checking into it. So we've got electric magnetic fields. A lot of people don't think about this, but when you have power lines that aren't underground and they're low-lying power lines, it is important. I recommend that you see if you can get in touch with a gas and electric company. Many of the gas and electric companies, I'm not going to say all, have the piece of equipment where they can come out and test the you know, the magnetic field. You don't want to, you want to test probably up to 300 feet away, definitely 100 to fit 200 feet, and make sure that the level's not too high, because you have a lot of homes that do have power lines still outside, right near the roads. That's dangerous. I mean, there's like 30 to 90 mg milligauss that is probably the field that's directly right under the high-powered power lines. Now, I don't want to scare anyone on the call if you're like, oh, my gosh, I've got power lines right side in my yard, because you may have, there's a difference between the type of power lines you have, whether it's going to be lower level or higher level, but you still, it's still good to check it out and find out. I sold years, you know, back I used to sell a lot of new homes, and we would, you know, one of the first things we would do if the buyers come in is check, not with the developments we would already know, but, you know, pretty much, but if somebody's just buying new or spot lots, and check the, have them come in and check, to have the electric company come in and check it and see. These are all tests that you can order or things you can check into when you first put the contract together. So it never hurts. And you can do things in a way where you're asking for these tests, and then if you decide not to get them, that's fine. And pretty much you're going to want to ask, you're going to want to say that, tell the seller you're going to pay for it. So, and there's a lot of work, homework you can do ahead of time. So it's not, you know, it's better to do more than less, and then some you're going to be able to see there's not a need for it. So it's just good to test. And so then radon, of course, radon, the level is supposed to be 4.0 picas or less. They have mitigation systems that, gosh, used to cost $3,000. Now you can get some from anywhere from $900 to $3,000. I don't want to cap it totally because it depends on the size of the house and what you need. But there's ways to mitigate radon. You know, with the mediation system. So there's a lot of things here that you can work through to get rid of, you know. So lead, we've all heard about lead for years, and any house built before 1978 mm-hmm. in the U.S., there's a good chance there's lead or that lead paint was used. You can check out lead. Lead can be remediated, too, and it's very expensive, but you can find out where it is. It may just be, you know, so we never want to scare anybody with all this because you're going to, there's 9 times out of 10, there's going to be something, you know, something that's maybe not perfect, and you have to decide how do we get rid of it, how do we not get rid of it, or this doesn't have this, and we feel pretty comfortable. Mold. Mold is another issue, and in Hawaii, being in the tropical areas, you have a lot of different allergens that come through because of all the tropics and the heat and the cold. It's not cold like the mainland cold, but it's moist, very moist and wet and damp. And mold loves to grow in damp mm-hmm. areas. It's not going to pretty much – mold doesn't really grow if it's completely dry. So you want to test that because there's different types of mold. And then people will say, well, what's the difference between, you know, mildew and mold? And they're the same, but they're not the same if you get really scientific about it because there's different types of spores and mold and bacteria. So they say that with bleach and soap and water – not just bleach alone, then there's different products that can kill some of it. But it depends on how badly it's growing. If you're in areas where it's behind the sheetrock, it's going to have to be ripped out, and it can be a pretty big job. If it's small amounts, you know, so these are things you need to check into because it can make people very sick. It can be very, very hazardous to your health. But, again, there may be ways to work around it. So it's... interesting, huh? It's stuff, but this is the world we live in. I mean, you're going to have stuff. You're not going to be able to get away from everything if you want to live in certain places. And it's almost like, so the septic, if you have a well or a septic, you want to actually have the certifications on both the well and the septic to make sure they're in good working order. And then you also want to, with the well, have bacteriological tests and a well yield test. The reason for two, the well yield is going to tell you the rate of the water, you know, water, the gallons per minute that the water is pumping out, and tell you if it seems that you're going to have enough water to buy that place. A lot of places only require 1 gallon a minute. I'd probably like about 5 to 8, 10 gallons is great, but a lot of places only require 1 gallon a minute. But you want to know. You want to know what you're up against to see if you need an extra holding tank or you don't, because these are the times that you can do it and maybe get the seller to pitch in. And but with the well, you want to check on the bacteriological and the nitrates and different levels because there could be contaminants in the water that you don't know about that came from underground stuff. You know, there could have been fertilizers from farms, spills, just the ground. There's so many things. I personally, I've had well water over the years at different one of the properties, I loved it. It didn't have the taste that I found in the city water. To me, the city water had a taste to it. I'm a bottled water drinker, which is probably, I drink bottled water all the time, and it's kind of bad because now they're telling us the plastic is bad, right? So I'm still buying, because I like to take the bottle at a time and take it with me. And so, see what I mean? Like, what do you do, right?
Yeah.
So I do drink bottled water, which now they're saying, hey, when it's shipped, it's getting contaminated from the heat. So you're kind of like, damned if you do, damned if you don't sometimes, right? But with the well, you want to know. You want to know what you're up against because either it's so bad, you don't want it, but typically it's not going to be so bad and the equipment may run $2,500 to $5,000. It could be a lot higher depending on the house and sizes, et cetera, but that can fix it. Mm-hmm. Not fix it, but clear out the problem before it gets to you. But these are things you want to know ahead of time because you don't want to buy a house and then find out later and then you don't have the extra money to fix it and you may not have bought it if you knew in the first place.
So yep.
These are just things to be careful about, but not be fearful. This is part of getting into the deal, huh?
Yeah.
And then the underground storage tanks and formaldehyde and those kind of things you want to check. So when you go in, even if it's a residential community, you may not want to just say, okay, I only need to check for this. Find out. Now, many people have lived in the same community for years. Many people know everything that's been going on. But then there's other people that are traveling a lot, moving a lot, et cetera. If you don't know the areas, check out the areas. Check out and ask people. Check the news. Go to the Consumer Protection Agency. Call them. Call the environmental office and say, is there any, were there any spills or anything I should know about? Was there any government work done? The seller is supposed to let you know of anything they know. So lots of times you have, the military had done their testing grounds and stuff in areas, and there could be silos and different things. Even if there was one 50 years ago, you need to know about it, because if you're going to get into wells and septic, you want to know what could have affected the ground, right? So it's just a matter of checking it out and saying, okay, this works. I'm happy with this. This is great. And, So just not to have big surprises later. And so you can see where a lot of home inspectors don't do all this. They're going to check your roof, your plumbing, your electrical, the structure, supposedly, not always the structure. So don't assume, and just check yourself, check it out. And again, you can ask for these tests if you feel like you haven't had time to check it out yet. But then, say, in the contract, you say, okay, I want to ask for these tests and give me at least 10 days to check it out or something to that effect. So if you don't decide you don't want to do the test, you don't have to, but at least you're covering yourself. And you may be up against several different contracts. Don't let yourself feel pressured if there's definitely something you're not sure of that you think it may have. That's not, you want to definitely do your due diligence. So there we go, Randy. I think we're almost finished the first half, and then you always have wonderful questions. And it's not, it's just a matter of doing your due diligence, really.
Yeah. And I, it's interesting. I did have a question. And by the way, in just a few moments, Pat Welsh will be joining us. He's the author of Danger, Duty, and Distrust. It's basically lessons learned in a life of law enforcement. And I honestly could not put the manuscript down. He sent it to me, and it's just really, really good stuff. So Pat Welsh will be joining us in a few minutes. But before we get to Pat, I do have a question. Because you mentioned two questions, I guess. One is, buyers are supposed to disclose, right, what they know about a property.
The seller,
Or the seller, I'm sorry. And obviously the real estate agent, I'm just going to, and I know you, so I know the answer, I guess, but I just want to throw this out there. If you as an agent, you know something, are there borderline things? Like, where is the line drawn?
I think if you know something like that, you need to disclose it. I don't think there's a borderline. I don't think you should ever hide anything. But the problem is that we as brokers and agents aren't, we can't know everything, and it's really not on us to find out every single thing like that. It's a matter of the seller is supposed to disclose, and then people should get tests. So, but whatever we know, we do need to disclose. And if we see something or something doesn't look right, we need to disclose. But borderline, no. I don't think they're really – because be honest and let the person decide what it is, right? I don't think there should be a borderline where we go, that's a little gray. I don't really need to mention that. No, if something's wrong or has the potential to be wrong, I think it needs to be mentioned. I really do.
Do you have you ever, and I'm just going to throw this out there too, because I don't know, I think this way, but it's happened. I mean, and we can't get into a whole supernatural conversation here, whether you believe in ghosts, but for instance, if somebody's been murdered in a home, is that something that, I mean, obviously
it's funny you say that, because there's different states have different rules, and basically they're saying it depends that if you, I think you should disclose that if somebody was murdered, a lot of people come in from China and they don't want to buy if there was if somebody even died in the house just naturally, but there's just different customs, but it's funny you say that, because there's some places will say you don't have to disclose that, like AIDS. AIDS was an issue before where people said, why would you have to disclose AIDS? Somebody's not going to catch AIDS from somebody. AIDS, there's just different things. I think if there's anything you should just go ahead and disclose it. But, it's funny you ask that question, because you have to check with your local jurisdiction to see if it's something you have to disclose. I feel like you really need to tell somebody. No, we had property recently. And we have property recently where the brother had died in the driveway a couple years ago, and they said it was suicide, and it's questionable. And then some said maybe it wasn't totally suicide, could have been drugs. And so I feel like we should disclose that. Now, someone else may say you don't have to disclose that, So it's really, really touchy.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are, for instance, that's an example of something that, like you say, depending on the state, you know, is a must disclose versus your call kind of thing. But yeah, I get it. And now the other question I had quickly before we transition to our second half of our show, is there more likelihood that there are environmental issues in rural areas, or is it more, purer typically out there where there's a lot of land and it's more in the city urban areas where there's
environmental issues? That's a wonderful question, Randy, because think about it. Those city urban areas were at one time farms, right, and land. They weren't cities, right?
Yeah.
So that's an excellent question. In the rural areas, you're going to be dealing with well and septics more than in the cities. You're probably going to have public water and sewer. In the contaminants in the water in the ground, you'd need to check with your local, you know, authorities. So that's a great question. So in that sense, yes, I think you probably would have more in the rural with well and septics than the public water and sewer. Some people love wells, though. They never want to go to public water. But that's a good point. And it depends on what it is. And that's where they really need to do their due diligence and find out what was there before and what's going on. Have there been any other issues?
Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Very cool. Again, awesome. Realty Universal Radio on the air everywhere, of course, realtyuniversal.com, the website. And feel free, obviously, to get in contact with Natalie and or staff. Probably staff at realtyuniversal.com. And of course, as always, if you have any questions, radio@realtyuniversal.com. You can email us as well. Coming up, we're going to take a quick break here. And on the other side, Pat Welsh is going to join us. As often our custom, if you're new to the show, first half, real estate stuff. And then second half, we dive into inspiration, motivation, people who are change agents, and I think our guest coming up qualifies, Pat Welsh, a lifelong law enforcement career, written a book called Danger, Duty, and Distrust, and again, it's life lessons learned from that, and I'm telling you, I shared with him, I actually, and you know I'm a crybaby anyway, but there are a couple of stories that he shares in that book that I just found myself tearing up, because he talks about, you know, basically being a warrior, servant, leader, and how all that ties in, you know, in law enforcement and some of the situations that he's run into and people that he's run into years down the road who he maybe helped when they were a kid and just, hey, you really helped me and I want to thank you and that kind of stuff. And that just, oh, man, I cried. Okay, I'm going to take a break. And coming up on the other side, we are going to have Pat Welsh join us. So, stay tuned. We will be right back.
Real estate is still a solid investment to invest in if you are in for the long haul. It can also be one of the best investments of your capital if handled correctly. In the United States, we are fortunate to have the tax write-offs that we take for granted while owning property. To obtain the best value for your real estate, there needs to be a market of both buyers and sellers, as well as a means of bringing the two together. Now more than ever, due to the recent loan crisis, even with bringing buyers and sellers together, there needs to be a way to make the financing work if a loan is needed. There are still many options available, and we can help. Whether you're a buyer, seller, going through a short sale, investing at the top or bottom, we have trained Realty Universal members in each state and affiliates who can customize your process the way it will work best for you. We do advise that you coordinate with your accountant and real estate attorney so your plan is intact. We have all learned through this economy that planning and averting pitfalls can make a world of difference in our futures. Ultimately, you have to rely on you after consulting with the experts. We set you up to win.
It's your Minute with Maxwell. Here's author, speaker, and mentor to millions, your friend, John Maxwell.
How do I get off of the I think I'll do it to the do it stage? You see, many people, their life is something like this. Ready, aim, 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 aim. They never fire. They never shoot. They never execute. Now, let me just also say there are some people that's like ready, fire, aim. And, you know, they don't execute either. They just shoot somebody accidentally. Execute means that there's a ready, preparation, aim, get your target, but then you shoot. The greatest gap in the world is the gap between knowing and doing.
Thanks, John. We trust we added value today. For the video version of The Minute with Maxwell, go to johnmaxwellteam.com.
We're excited to be able to continue to bring to the world stage a company as dedicated to universal excellence as Realty Universal, Inc. On the surface, our company has been initiating a revolution in the real estate world since 1996. We started offering our menu programs when it was not the standard way of doing business. Now it is so much more understood and commonplace, although we are still ahead of the rest due to experience within the systems. In today's economy, our menu programs make it possible for buyers and sellers to still have a win-win situation. The best situation in life is when everyone wins. Everyone must give in to assist in the outcome, and what happens is very positive experience. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe that sellers and buyers should have choices. As obvious as this seems, traditional real estate has never been structured in such a way as to allow the multitude of choices sellers and buyers truly deserve. After years of perfecting and receiving feedback on our programs, we have developed real estate menu systems that are used by buyers, sellers, and agents and brokers who are part of our Realty Universal network, which is growing by leaps and bounds.
Leaps, yea, verily, leaps and bounds. And, oh, by the way, RealtyUniversal.com, again, the website there to check out if you're a broker, agent, and interested in the Realty Universal membership. And we've done several shows, by the way. You can check out the website, obviously blogtalkradio.com/Realty Universal, and just check out the archives. There's lots and lots of amazing shows. And we've done that a couple times now. I know we've kind of camped on the Realty Universal membership for brokers and agents. And man, oh, man, lots of benefits, lots of reasons, if you're listening, why you should be a part of that for sure. Let us dive in, because this is going to fly by, one of those half hours that flies by. Pat Welsh is joining us, and he is a lifelong civil servant, policeman, FBI, on and on. The bio could take a half hour, but he's written a book called Danger, Duty, and Distrust. And really, like I said, I've had an opportunity to read some of the manuscript, and it really is life lessons that he learned on the job in law enforcement over the years. And we're going to talk about it. His website is warrior-servant-leader.com. That's warrior-servant-leader.com, and his whole concept, and we will be drilling down into some of that, the whole idea of the warrior servant leader philosophy that he really has developed in his years in law enforcement. Pat, welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, Randy, thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks.
It's so good to have you. Now, again, I mentioned before the break, I've read some of the manuscript that you sent me in, and literally the stories of, you know, of you being present and choosing to be different than maybe, as you said, the typical cop in a given situation where somebody was belligerent or, you know, you might want to just default to using force. And you know, at various times talk about some of the stories where you were able to communicate, you know, with people and connect with people. And then literally in the one instance, and maybe you could recount that story, but you ran into a guy at a store who was a kid when you helped him out, and he said, "Hey, you really helped me." And I got emotional, man, because and that must have been emotional for you as well, that particular story. But so let's begin by talking about the book, because I want to make sure that we really give people a sense of, you know, why you wrote this book, and then we can kind of pull out some of the key, maybe life lessons, two or three of them, And obviously it's going to be available here very, very soon. So why did you decide to write the book? What kind of prompted you and motivated you to do that?
Well, I retired after 26 years in a large urban department, very violent. 26 years of dealing with death and destruction, and I ran homicide squad, and I was the commander. And as you're going through your career, and it's not just law enforcement, but no matter what your career is, you tend to focus on the negative, and it's easy to complain as you're riding through your career, and you can't wait till you retire. And then when you finally retire, you start looking back, and it suddenly becomes more nostalgic. And you start remembering the good, the good times, and, gee, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. And you kind of have conflicting emotions, particularly about retiring. Did I leave too soon? So I was actually prompted to sit down and write a reflection. You were partially right on the title of Danger, Duty, and Distrust, and kind of the subtitle that goes with that is A Rare Look at Life Behind the Badge. And so I wanted to create a book that gave both non-police people, what we call civilians, a look behind the badge that they would never otherwise see. But at the same time, I wanted to write a book that would challenge police officers that are still out there protecting and serving of, hey, here's kind of some of the things, the way you think and the way you act and how you impact people, you might want to take a harder look at yourself. So it's kind of a dual audience. Law enforcement is like no other profession, none. Every day you put the badge on, you put the gun on, you internalize, but you don't share. I may not come home. This may be my last day on earth. And so I sat back and really reflected on all the lessons I learned in 26 years. Some were good, some were bad. Some were about myself. Some were about the people we were protecting and serving. there's a chapter in the book called Don't Believe Everything You Think. And that's really directed towards the civilian world. Don't believe everything you think about police officers. So it was a really good opportunity for me to to sit down and really reflect and put on paper that 26-year career, and then share it with people of, hey, here's a look at, it's not TV.
It's real world.
Blue Bloods or, NYPD Blue or anything like that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. We're the and you were an FBI police officer and in the FBI, right?
I was trained at the FBI National Academy, which they bring several hundred cops from around the world together four times a year for some very in-depth training, and we do it at the same academy that they train, regular agents. But
wow.
we didn't. And then I worked with the FBI and Secret Service and DEA throughout my career.
Wow, that's amazing! And you said you were in homicide most of the time, or that must have been really difficult.
I was the commander of homicide for 3 years. Actually, I had all violent crime, robbery, rape. The detectives reported to their sergeants and then to me. I was the commander there for 3 years. I was commander of undercover narcotics for 3 years. And where I was policing, we were averaging 50, 60 homicides a year.
Ooh, where were you?
Wow.
Dayton, Ohio.
Wow.
We, it's most people, if you say Dayton now, everybody goes, oh, yeah, that's that basketball team that made it to the Elite Eight. Or that's where the Wright brothers were from.
Yeah.
Wow.
But there's a it was a great career. And then in the book even, you know, there's you probably Randy got a kick out of the lessons I learned from shooting a chair in my office. I mean, there's some humorous moments, if you will. And then there's some, you know, some very serious ones. I talk about the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about.
Which I bet has to happen a lot, doesn't it?
It's amazing how much of a us versus them mentality there is when it comes to citizens and police officers.
I've got a question. How do you, because I would imagine, I went through something, a real bad situation that I'd like to talk to you about sometime maybe, with my brother dying, but how do you, because I would think if you see in all those deaths and homicides and getting into the, you have to desensitize some, right? Because how would you not be, if you couldn't desensitize, you wouldn't be able to go home and live a regular life because everything would bother you, right? How do you do that as a police officer? I mean, I'm just assuming you would have to. I can't imagine you would make it barely a long time if you didn't learn how to desensitize some of it.
And you're absolutely true. And what happens to typically to police officers where they're exposed to a lot of death and violence, so in your more urban departments, bigger city departments that guys are going to see. My first murder was 3 weeks, you know, on the job. And it was a murder-suicide. And I talk a little bit about it, that in the book, is that you have to, police officers have to recognize there's a difference between having psychological defense mechanisms against, you know, to protect you against what you're seeing and doing and having to deal with at these scenes. But you can't do those things. You can't have those defenses and sacrifice your humanity and your empathy. Mm-hmm. Because when you stop caring about, and it's easy to have those mechanisms that go, hey, it's just a dead body. You know, I didn't know them. It's not personal. I have a job to do. The problem is for police officers is they still treat the living the same way.
Mm. Okay.
And so I get into that, but I also get into it from a citizen standpoint. Citizens need to understand what officers see and hear and deal with every day. That what you think is they're being rude or they don't care is really that self-defense mechanism.
I can that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's a lot of post-traumatic stress?
Yes and no.
Okay.
They're for officers that have actually been involved in shootings where they've had to discharge their gun at a person, not a dog, not putting a deer down that got hit by a car, but actually getting in a gunfight. I've seen a lot of officers have that post-traumatic stress, and then some of them deal with it pretty well. Other guys, it's career-ending. I'm a cradle Catholic, born and raised Catholic all my life, went to Catholic schools all the way through law school. And this is nothing scientific, but I have observed in my career, it's the guys that were raised, guys and gals that were raised, very staunch, Catholic, have the hardest time afterwards after they've been involved in a shooting, especially if somebody got killed.
Right.
And there's nothing scientific about my observations. I'm not a psychologist, but the officers that I had that worked for me, that were involved in shootings, some of them that were fatal. It was the guys that were raised staunch Catholic, really struggled afterwards.
That makes sense. That makes sense. But
well, because the whole loving God deal, man, has got to just play with your brain, you know, day in and day out. God, Lord, what is going on? And you, I want to ask you a question, and we haven't even got to the website and the warrior servant leader stuff, and I definitely want to get to that in a minute. And if you just tuned in, we are talking to Pat Welsh, who is an amazing speaker, trainer, coach, former policeman, and has written a book, Danger, Duty, and Distrust. And the tagline again is, Pat, what?
A rare look at life behind the badge.
There you go. Okay, I hadn't jotted that down. I'm sorry. And his website is warrior-servant-leader.com. And I love that, and I can't wait to dive in. I do have one question, though, as you were talking about. It was fascinating. Again, you've given us a glimpse behind the badge in just these few moments because, you know, putting yourself in a policeman's place, you know, especially in a city like yours with just the amount of murder and, you know, things that you see day in and day out. And like you say, you've got to be able to detach to some degree. But then, like you said, policemen then begin, you know, treating people who are alive the same way. And is that because, and my question is that because it's just really too difficult to go back and forth? It's just difficult to, you know, make that switch because there's just so much ugliness that you've got to detach from. Is it just easier to kind of stay detached? Is that the problem?
Well, I think it's like life in general. It's not just cops that face, you know, the struggles and the danger and the duties that you have. I mean, parents have all sorts of struggles raising kids. But I think in answer to your question, for police officers, when I've taught cops from all over the country on how to investigate the legal issues in investigating homicide cases. And one of the things I try and drill into them is this saying, repetition is the mother of all learning. The more you hear something repeated, the more you're likely to remember it and probably believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a learning tool that when you're trying to teach them, the repetition, like when you try to teach your kids the ABCs, you put it in a song, you know. And
right.
And
yeah.
If you ask anybody that, I mean, you ask it, I'm well into my 50s. You ask me to recite the ABCs, and in my brain, the song, you know,
right.
You're saying it to the tune because
mm-hmm.
of that repetition, because that's the way you learned. In law enforcement, the repetition of being exposed to what you're exposed to, and it's not just
yeah.
homicides, it's, I mean, domestic violence, you know, robberies. Well, that becomes normal to you,
mm-hmm.
Whereas it's abnormal to the rest of society, unless mm-hmm. you're a career criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And you start breaking down the sense of, I don't want to say what's right and wrong, but what is normal and acceptable, because you're repeatedly exposed to it, and you particularly, I mean, if you keep going back to the same house week after week or month after month on family troubles calls,
right.
that becomes normal, and it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the struggle. After you've been on the job about 3 years, that if you don't realize that it's happening to you, then that desensitizing that Natalie talked about, your response to the calls you take and the tragedy you see becomes normal to you. And
that makes sense.
And I talk about it. There's a whole chapter in the book about the five stages of a law enforcement career.
Really?
And at some point, you really have to, about year 13, that's a critical time in your career that you are either going to rededicate yourself to why you became a police officer, or you're going to become what we call retired on duty. You are just going to ride out however much time you have left and hope you make it. And you're literally, you're collecting a paycheck, but you're retired on duty.
Wow. I give you a lot of respect for being able to do it so many years, because it's definitely not a,
This is amazing. Pat Welsh, time is flying by. We have like 6 or 7 minutes here. I would love to at least get an overview of the warrior, servant, leader idea, really, that has kind of evolved out of your, of course, out of the book and your post-career.
Can I interject just real quick before it doesn't go through real fast? Can I just interject real quick, since your book's on the wait list and then people can't buy it now, but they will be able to soon, how do they either get in touch with you or get on a wait list? Because we have a lot of people that will also be archive listeners, so how do they reach you, or what, you know, website, or what do we do?
The website is basically open to anybody to, you know, visit.
Okay, that's the best way to, okay. What's the website again?
Warrior-servant-leader.com.
Okay. Warrior-servant-leader.com.
Okay. Right. And then once you're there, there's completely free, set up an account, which... there's a closed, you know, group social networking where people that are interested in, you know, becoming a warrior, servant, and a leader, or improving, you know, maybe, and I always say, a lot of guys are warriors, but they forget about being servants and leaders. So there's a closed group. It's free to, takes 30 seconds to activate an account. When the book comes out, people that are members of that closed social networking, it's basically, you know what it is, it's a private Facebook page in essence. People that are already part of that group before this launches on Amazon, they'll be able to get a free download of the book.
Great.
There'll be no...
Cool.
No cost.
And then people that will buy it on Amazon.
Once it launches, then it's not. I'm not selling it for free on Amazon.
Sure.
Yeah.
But for people that are.
Well, at least they'll know they can get it. And then if they're in that list, then they would probably get an email knowing it's ready, right? So if they want to send other people and say, hey, you ought to buy this, they can do that.
Absolutely.
That would be great.
Absolutely.
That would be great. Wow.
And we are developing
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I want to make sure people can get to you. Okay.
Yeah, and we are developing a Facebook page as well, and that will be public, but it's the website and the members-only social networking group will have the access to the book. And a lot of the stuff that that I work on, I publish in several law enforcement publications and some other occasional guest columns. People that are members only would get access and preview to some of those writings that they probably otherwise would never see.
Fantastic.
Well, let's do this. Could you give us a bit of an overview on the Warrior Servant Leader? Obviously, that's the name of the actual website. Talk to us, and again, we have probably 3 or 4 minutes here, but maybe just a quick, I know this is brutal, we really need a whole another half hour, but just a quick overview of your concept of a warrior, servant, leader, and how those titles kind of intertwine.
I know the book is about, you know, my career in law enforcement. People think of warriors, they just automatically, you know, think of knights in shining armor or samurais or whatever. The reality is every person, no matter what your walk of life is, what your career is, it does not matter. You want to fight for things that you believe in, which makes you a warrior. You want to help other people get what they want and need in life. And parents, I think, are just – if there was an epitome of a servant, warrior servant leader, it's a parent. And, and then
well,
leaders
Amen.
And, you know, leaders you know, leadership is influence. Everybody thinks leadership, you have to have some position or title. And that's the farthest thing away from true leaders.
True.
Leaders are people who influence other people. And you can be a good leader or a bad leader. So this whole book, although it's in the context of my experiences as a police officer, as you read the book, I get into parents, businessmen, whether you're on the front line of a manufacturing plant, whether you're a pastor or just a member of a congregation at a church, these three words, warrior, servant, leader, are about you. And so it's as much about a look at life behind the badge as it is about encouraging people. I wore a badge on my shirt. You have a badge that nobody sees. That you're fighting for and serving and trying to influence people in your lives just like I did. I happen to have a uniform. So it's not just about cops.
That's good.
And you touched on it. There's four questions. These are the four questions of warriors, servants, and leaders. Are you doing the right thing at the right time, in the right way, and for the right reasons? And if the answer is no, stop what you're doing. And that really is the code of a warrior servant leader, that you're protecting with courage, you're serving with humility, you're leading with compassion, but in everything you think, say, and do, you have to ask yourself those four questions. And then you'll always strive to live up to that. So it doesn't matter whether you're a police officer or a stay-at-home mom or a student or a teenager, you know, in a high school. Protecting, serving, and leading, you're doing those things in the people that you touch every day.
Yeah.
So that's what the website really is geared. The book is, it's about Pat as a cop. But the website is for everybody that wants to be, that warrior, that servant, that leader, either in their home, at work, in their community, in their faith community. So it's there to encourage and grow and build people to be what they've always dreamed of.
Wow, that sounds wonderful.
Powerful.
Man, oh man, dude, you, are you, I get asked this because what a message, what a story, what a message. Obviously, that book is going to be a big, obviously a big deal in terms of you speaking. But are you available for people to have you come and speak to their groups?
Oh, absolutely. And through this website, you can reach me for coaching, mastermind groups, speaking. In fact, I'm working on getting a virtual mastermind together on the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. So people, and on the website, there's links to all those services.
Wow.
Or they can just call me.
Wow. Amazing. Pat Welsh, again, warrior-servant-leader.com. Check it out. Oh, my goodness. Such good stuff. We're going to have to get you back, Pat. Thank you again for joining us today, man. This has been amazing.
Thank you so
much.
Well,
thank you.
On. It's been wonderful. Gonna read your book when it comes out. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks, man.
All right, thank you.
Thank you,
all right,
Pat,
man, take care.
So much. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.